We hear a lot of perspectives on the Mankind podcast. Inclusion of a guest is not an endorsement of their views, and the opinions expressed here do not always represent the mission or values of the Mankind Project USA.
This is Ashanti Branch from the Ever Forward Club, and you are listening to the Mankind podcast.
Hey guys, Brandon here. Just want to jump in quickly before we get underway with Ashanti, just to say thank you. You know, on Monday we launched the show officially. After a lot of work and procrastination and overcomplicating things, we finally just said, "Ugh, let's just do it. Let's get it out there." And the reaction, the response, and the feedback has completely exceeded our expectations. And so I'm just here to say thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Because the sheer fact that you guys have downloaded and listened and shared and subscribed and left us a 5-star rating on iTunes, all of these seemingly insignificant acts are huge pillars towards helping us enact our vision of helping men all over the world understand that there is more than just one way to be a man. There are more ways to move through life than the rules and the barriers and the boundaries that have been taught to us growing up by other men, other women, other influences in our lives. We are able to live our mission right now because of you. So thank you. I appreciate what you've done. I appreciate what you're going to do. And I just want to let you know that I am committed to continuing to bring the best value we can for this show and ask the tough questions that those of you out there listening are wanting to hear the answers for. So enough from me, and now to introduce today's guest. But before we do that, and before we get into our conversation with Ashanti Branch, I want you guys to listen to an audio track from the documentary, The Mask You Live In. Now, this documentary was my first introduction to Ashanti and the work that he does. And this documentary asks the question, what is the impact we are having on the boys in our lives, whether they're our own, whether we coach them, whether we're an educator, whether we're their uncle? What impact do we have on these boys' lives when we tell them, be a man, don't be a sissy, don't be a girl? Now, think about that. Are we helping them by saying be a man, or are we hurting them? Because when this 8-year-old, let's just say, hears be a man, but he's a boy, are we helping or are we confusing him? And you're going to learn through our conversation with Ashanti today, where we go into the masks that we as men wear, that we've been raised to put on to protect ourselves or promote ourselves. You're going to learn that these masks were created when we were little, when we were just boys. And so throughout this interview, I want you to continue to ask yourself that question. What impact do I have on the lives of the boys in my life when I tell them, suggest to them, or encourage them to be a man and not be a boy? Enjoy.
Stop crying.
Stop with the tears.
Don't cry.
Pick yourself up.
Stop with the emotions.
Don't be a pussy.
Don't let nobody disrespect you.
Be cool and be kind of a dick.
Always keep your mouth shut.
Nobody likes a tattletale.
Bros come before hoes.
Don't let your woman run your life.
You a bitch.
What a fag.
Get laid. Do something.
Be a man.
Be a man.
Grow some balls.
The three most destructive words that every man receives when he's a boy is when he's told to be a man.
We've constructed an idea of masculinity in the United States that doesn't give young boys a way to feel secure in their masculinity, so we make them go prove it all the time.
Within their peer group culture, each of them is posturing based on how the other boys are posturing, and what they end up missing is what they each really want, which is just that closeness.
In good times, guys are like really close to each other, but when things get a little bit worse, you're on your own.
From middle school, I had 4 really close friends. Once I kind of went into high school, I struggle finding people I can talk to because I feel like I'm not supposed to get help.
Our kids get up every morning. They have to prepare their mask for how they're going to walk to school. A lot of our students don't know how to take the mask off. What is it you don't let people see? Almost 90% of you have pain and anger on the back of that paper.
If you never cry, then you have all these feelings stuffed up inside of you, and then you can't get them out.
They really buy into a culture that doesn't value what we've feminized. If we're in a culture that doesn't value caring, doesn't value relationships, doesn't value empathy, you are going to have boys and girls, men and women, go crazy.
I had anger issues in high school. I felt like an outcast.
I've been suspended at least once every year I was here.
We would just look for trouble and just like try to fight.
boys are more likely to act out. They're more likely to become aggressive. Most people miss that as depression or see it as a conduct disorder or just a bad kid.
I felt like just giving up on life. You know, I just had suicide thoughts in my head at sixth grade.
I felt alone for a long time, and I actually thought about killing myself.
Whether it's homicidal violence or suicidal violence, people resort to such desperate behavior only when they are feeling shamed and humiliated or feel they would be if they didn't prove that they were real men.
If you're told from day one, don't let nobody disrespect you, and this is the way you handle it as a man, respect is linked to violence.
If I can man up, why step down from that? You feel me?
It's like instinct.
So man up!
Man up!
Man up!
Man up!
Throw some fucking balls!
Act like a man!
Be a man!
Be a man!
For my kids, I was gonna end this hyper-masculine narrative here.
G'day, Brandon Clift here from the Mankind Project, and I'd like to welcome you to another live interview with Ashanti Branch for the Mankind Podcast. I have a lot of anticipation as we lead into this interview, as we discuss the basic understandings of what it means to wear a mask outside of the pandemic. We're not talking physical masks that we put on or that we're suggested that to wear. We're talking about the metaphorical masks that we as men, that we as people, all people can put on to protect ourselves, promote ourselves. And who better to do that with than a giant in this movement? One of the OGs of the healthy masculinity and manhood space. And Ashanti, I want to invite you to introduce yourself to the audience. Tell us a bit about yourself and we'll get underway.
Yeah, man. Thank you, brother. Thanks for the introduction. My name is Ashanti Branch. I'm from Oakland, California. I've been in the Mankind Project community since 2011. And I am a son, a brother, a family member, a community, a mentor. I run an organization called Ever Forward, which is about social emotional development for young men. And our primary work right now is around masks. And what I say to people is, we're not talking about our personal protection masks that we have to wear, but we are talking about masks of emotional disconnection, the masks that we sometimes wear that no one even can see, that cause us not to be fully known. And so I'm really glad to be here, and I'm glad to be in this conversation with you, brother.
It's always great to share this space. Little backstory. We've been friends for a couple of years now. Back in 2016, I saw a documentary called The Mask You Live In. And a documentary that really kind of dives into the question of how are we raising our boys in society today? What is the impact on the lives of boys and then eventually men when we say to them, don't be a girl, be a man up. And it really had a large impact on me. I mean, coming from a private all boys school, mate, that was the breeding ground for microaggressions and trying to prove who's the alpha dog on top. And I tell you what, I tried, but I was never on top. So I began to adopt a lot of beliefs about myself as a man going into my adulthood, which led to drugs. It led to a lot of partying. It led to mistreating the emotions of women. And once I saw this documentary, it really helped me get an idea of my role as a man in the world, how I turn up. You know, am I directly or indirectly perpetrating the belief that men are more powerful than women? It's better to be heterosexual than homosexual. It really helped give me a bird's eye view of the kind of scene that we're in. And so, I was so moved by the documentary. I reached out to Ashanti on LinkedIn, and within 20 minutes, man, I'm telling you, Ashanti is a guy who does not stop working. Probably one of the hardest working human beings I've ever met. And we ended up on the phone. I don't know what the time was in the States. And we spoke for like 2 hours. fast forward, you're able to come to Australia. We're able to meet in person. We're walking around Surfers Paradise on the Gold Coast, handing out masks for people to fill in, to share their experiences. And mate, what a beautiful journey it's been since then, through friendship, through this work. So mate, let's get started. Let's get underway. You're the host of the Taken Off the Mask podcast, and I was just recently listening to your interview you did with Lewis Howes. Those that don't know Lewis, he is the host of the School of Greatness. His podcast is huge. He has a large reach, and he also wrote a book called The Mask of Masculinity, which is a phenomenal read. I recommend everyone pick it up. And in your interview, you guys really dove into how we as young boys pick up these masks, how we build these and create these masks to protect ourselves, promote ourselves. So mate, give us a kind of a basic understanding of this process of when we're boys trying to get by and why we use these masks.
Yeah, you know, I don't think I remember when I first started wearing one, but I here's what I do know. I knew that my mom taught me to be really kind and caring and loving, and I was very gentle. I was always helping. But when I went outside my mom's house to go to school, to the park, to ride my bike, there were rules, and they were not written on the side. They're not like the rules that say stop here, turn left. It wasn't like signs out there, but it's rules. And the rules are, you better not be too nice, you better not be too kind, you better not be too soft, you better not cry, definitely. You better never be afraid. There are all these rules, these man box rules that said, if you do this, you're a man. And if you don't do any of this, if you don't do this stuff, then you're going to be outside of the circle of men, the box of men, and we're going to make fun of you, and either you're going to decide to come back here, or we're just going to like ostracize you so much. And so those became really powerful rules. And I remember elementary school was, you know, rough. I mean, and then middle school was even rougher, right? Because first of all, I learned in elementary, you got to be tough and strong. And then I'm getting bullied, right? Because now I'm afraid. And it's happening at PE. I don't want to tell anybody, because if I tell them, my friends are going to think I'm weak. And then, so I'm going to just give the guy my money for days and almost 2 months maybe. And I remember just all the journeys of like, this doesn't feel right. I'm not a real man if I'm giving somebody my money, but I'm afraid to get beat up. So, and I'm a little smart enough to know getting beat up doesn't sound like a good idea. I couldn't see my way through it. And yeah, so all those stories, these were like, there was no man in my house. My father died before I was born. So what I was learning was from people who I looked to on the street who got respect and who were tough and who seemed to be strong. And I think that I picked up those rules and I adopted them. I adopted them as part of who I needed to be to survive, not because we didn't talk about feelings in my community. You don't talk about emotions. You just don't have any. You know what I'm saying? You don't talk about feelings because you're not supposed to have feelings. You're supposed to just be tough and strong and have all the get all the girls' phone numbers. And I was like, it's not working. It's not working. And I realized that I was just trying to just get by. And that the mask started really, really early, even before I could even describe what I was doing. Like so many things, as I've looked back, I'm saying, oh, that's what I was doing. I was protecting myself. I was protecting what I thought my image was. I was protecting my siblings, my family, all of it. But they were practiced. And when they become practiced, they become part of you. And then you don't know you're wearing them because everyone asks you how you're doing. You say, I'm fine, even when you're not fine. But that's what everyone does. So you just do it because that's what you're expected to do. I mean, if you're not doing fine, people be like, he's talking about his feelings. So like, who does it? And so what you do is you learn, oh, that's not okay. And that's how it, I think the last thing I'll say, Dave Chappelle, he used this quote, his mom used to tell him, it says, he said inside he was really gentle and caring like a lamb, you know, but his mom said, sometimes you have to be the lion to be the lamb you really are. Like today I get to be kind and gentle and caring and loving. I rarely have to be the lion. I remember most of my life growing up, I was always lying. I was always like, that sounds like a funny word. I was always being aggressive, dominant, like that kind of, because that's what the world said they respected and appreciated. And so now it's a little different, right? And I think it's really rough. Yeah.
Now you've been an educator
for a long time. And before you were teaching this stuff through the Ever Forward Club, your organization, you were actually a school teacher at your alma mater, the school you went to. And so I'm sure that gave you a bit of a unique lens to see things through of, you know, your experience through school, what you had to go through, and then being a dean of that school, what you witnessed among the boys. So what does that look like? Like, what are these little microaggressions look like? How did you see these boys put on their mask?
You know, as a teacher, and I taught in a different school than I went to, but I was a vice principal. I was a dean at the school I went to. When I was a first year teacher, I saw smart young men in my class. Like, if somebody, like as a teacher, when you watch a student, you just see how they show up. You see how they try, even on tough topics. I saw smart young men who were pretending that they weren't smart. Like, I'm talking about like, it's almost intuition. I guess I can't say I knew they were smart, but you could feel it. You could feel the, and I'm talking about intelligence, meaning that's a connection between your experiences and your intuition, right? Like, these young men had a lot of intuition about life. They could see things deeper than just the first surface, right? I was a math teacher, so it was really analytical, but even when they couldn't understand the analytics of a problem, they could analyze their way around it. They'd be like, well, no, I just did it like this. And I'm like, oh, that was, I didn't even think about that. But what I saw in them is a space to be able to go deeper. And I'm like, but you're not even trying, brother. You're not even trying. And so what they would do is, at that school, smart wasn't cool. At the school I taught at, cool was you're an athlete. You are a handsome young man. So you get all the girls. You got a car at a young age. You got money. You got nice shoes. It was cosmetics. It was on the outside. Being respected wasn't how kind you were, how respectful you were to teachers. That was seen as weak. Oh, you let him tell you what to do? I have many kids would be like, I'll tell a kid, hey, I need you to blah, blah, blah. And some other kid be like, oh, you gonna let him tell you what to do? Like, he your daddy or something? And I'm like, why are you even saying that? Why are you? And so because to them, tough is when a teacher tells you to do something, nobody can tell me what to do. And when I had these young men saying to me, I'm a man, you can't tell me what to do. I know that very well. So I'm like, well, I'm not disrespecting you as a man. I'm asking you man to man to move your chair over there. Because the idea is that a fight, if you try and have this battle with teenagers, and what I see teachers do all the time is they try and battle with teenagers who have way more energy all day long. Testosterone is shooting their body all day long. They're waiting for a fight. I'm like, listen, I'm not here to fight with you. I ain't your enemy. So my ask to you is respectfully, just move your chair. And right. And then when they have to decide between themselves, their own thinking and what their peers are saying, I've seen students fall trapped to that. And so I realized he doesn't want to be talking back right now, but he's on show. Now his peers are watching him. So I saw these masks show up. It's like, I got to prove to you I'm a real man. I can't let you take advantage of me. And I have, you know, and because I was a hothead as an early teacher, I was a hothead, man. I'm telling you, boy, I've said some things to kids I probably shouldn't say. I'm kind of embarrassed by them now, but I was a hothead too. So when you got a teenage hothead with an adult hothead, it doesn't necessarily make for a good scenario. But what I saw was that they were masking, and sometimes I even masked up too. Mm. You're going to play the tough role with me? Okay, I can be the tough role. Let's do that. Yeah. And then what you end up having is battles over nothingness, you know? But that was me learning as a teacher. Like, that doesn't work, because I can always get louder. And then what happens? You louder, I get louder, we get louder. And then we're yelling at each other. And what does that do? Nothing. Yeah. Nothing solved. You just break relationships. So the mask, I think, was really early in those days. And when we had that opportunity in the documentary, I saw young men who were not showing. Every meeting, they would come to meetings. Everybody's a 10. On a scale from 1 to 10, I'm a 10. I'm a 10. I'm a 10. I'm a 10. Everybody's a 10. Maybe 1-9 over there. And they were not opening up. And so that one, they were asking, could they film filming us? And I said, well, you don't want to film this club, because these young men, they just lie to each other. Like, they don't open up. And they were like, well, at least we can like see the resistance. I was like, well, I'm glad you want to see resistance, because that's all you're going to see. And when I thought about the mask activity, I was like, what if they just didn't have to talk about it? What if they didn't have to talk about it? So the activity was a test of me trying something. I was like, I was afraid. I was nervous. I was actually, what if it doesn't work? And literally, when they threw those papers at each other and they opened up a new mask that wasn't theirs, oh my goodness. It was I'm literally in the moment in that documentary, but it was a place for me to see, oh wow, this is going to work. And it was working.
That was a powerful point of the documentary. That's probably one of the most powerful parts, where you saw these guys that were you know, putting on a front, you could see very well they were masking their feelings. But when you had them kind of write their masks on the, what they show on the front, what they're actually hiding behind, and they scrunch it up and throw it at someone across the room, you know, you gave them a chance at anonymity, which I think is a very healthy start. And that you saw that like 90% of the kids in the room, they had happy, funny, light, you know, easygoing, but on the back there was pain. There was anger for almost all of them. And that was like a penny drop moment, because you watch these boys that are so armored up. They're trying to protect themselves so much to keep an image of strength and happiness and comedic, you know, you see them just break down collectively as to, man, life is not easy.
Yeah.
And I love this conversation because of those penny drop moments. You know, a big one for me, I didn't discover this till, you know, I'd say the Mask You Live In documentary planted a seed for me, but it wasn't till about a year later that I actually, yeah, and through the men's work was able to unravel and get to a level of understanding, like, oh, wow, like what has happened in my life? What were the experiences I had that made me put on armor, that made me put on these masks to protect myself, to survive? And I had all these experiences that I had shoved away the moment they happened when I was a little boy that came to the surface. You know, something that I've done a lot of work on that I'm not ashamed to speak to is when I was 7, a man tried to molest me. And I remember not even like in that moment, not even thinking about right or wrong or anything like that, but just knowing something felt off. And after that happened, I just shoved it down. So when the time came for me to be in relationship with women and girls, just from a teenage age, I didn't do it with kindness or a soft heart. What happened to me? Well, someone tried to use their power on me. So how can I use my power on someone else to get what I want? Because it happened to me, I can do it to someone else. And it was just that penny drop moment of, wow, from such a young age, that mask began to form. I'm curious, man, like from the elevation that you get to sit from the be able to see from a bird's eye view, from leading this charge with the Million Masks movement, what have been some experiences for you that contributed to those early masks?
Man, you know, I've been, so November of last year, 2020, our work was featured in Lisa Ling, This Is Life. And I was at a young men's rites of passage retreat. And like I'm in the trees, I'm in the woods, in the dirt and trees, right? Just, and I was watching this at home and I shared it with all my family and we were excited. We were going to be on it. Now, I didn't remember what I said in the trees because I'm in with the men. I'm not masking up. I'm really trying my best just to be. And I remember at the fire. So I'm going to play the scene really quick. So first scene, I'm with the students in the circle, do the mask. Oh, I'm super juiced. Friends are like texting me. They're like, oh, dude, we just saw you, blah, blah, blah. Because I shared it with everybody. Commercial goes, come back from commercial, where they're talking about the next scene. There was the fire. And I'm leading this fire episode where it's like the worst day of your life. And I didn't remember what I said because it was filmed, you know, a year before. And I literally, in that scene, I talk about being 8 years old and being raped at a camp. And literally, while I'm sitting here watching this, my brain is like, oh my goodness, I haven't told my mom about this yet. So she's watching this live. I'm watching it. I freak out like, and I make a quick video for myself just to be like, what am I going to do? Like, I need to like process this. Oh my God. And so at 8 years old, when that happened, like my mom, like I had to go see her. I had to go talk to her because like, she just found out on national TV when all her friends watching. And I felt not only bad about it, I felt responsible that I didn't want her to find out like that.
Yeah.
And so I'm setting that up to say when I had a talk with her, what she did is, as a mom would do, she blamed herself. She's like, I wish I had known. I wish you had told me. Like I would have hurt somebody. And I think at 8 years old, I knew how much my mom loved us. Like, you know, and I think as an 8 year old, I had to process, okay, if I tell this and she hurts somebody, what's going to happen to her? Like I'm trying to tell you how I processed as an 8 years old. I don't remember, but I remember, but the decision was not to tell her. So the clear decision was don't tell. Yeah. But I remember that it was, I was me trying to process at 8 year old, the best I can, being the man of the house. Like, what do I need to do to protect the family? And protecting the family means you keep the family together. What does an 8 year old really know about that? But I had to make a decision. And man, I tell you, we had that talk that night, and it was a beautiful, you know, it was hard to have the talk with her, but I needed to. And I told her, I said, listen, luckily part of my body and my brain and my chemistry was able to like stuff it away. Like I didn't remember for a lot of years, but what I did is I turned to food. Yeah. So I have, there's a picture I have before it happened. I remember, and I can see, I mean, I was always a husky kid, but after that I began to balloon. Like I just remember seeing another picture, like, and I'm like, I mean, I'm full. And I remember, as I'm thinking about it right now, those two pictures, like I began to eat for comfort because I couldn't talk about it. I needed to do something with it. I mean, it was trauma. And there's a book that says, what is it called? I think I forgot the name of it. The idea of the book, the idea of this idea is that, yeah, I feel it right now, right? So food became this safe haven, right? You're not hurting nobody when you eat food. I'm not doing drugs. I'm not alcohol. I'm not getting drunk. I'm just stuffing myself. I'm hurting myself, but I'm not hurting my community, right? So in my mind, I'm like, no one. I remember being a freshman in college and people were like, oh, do you drink? I'm like, no, I don't drink. I don't do drugs. I just eat. And literally, it was my badge of honor that I just eat a lot because I did. And I just began to just, I mean, it's been a journey of my life. You know, and now I'm more in a more clear place and I'm like, oh, I know what I'd use food for. Food is to feel good. And therefore I need to have a better relationship with food. And so all that thing that stems from that 8 year old stuff, but it's roots that just never got dealt with. And so underneath, they just built up. And you can keep chopping off the top. You can keep chopping off the thing on the outside, but the roots are going to get bigger. And at some point they're going to take over the house, right? At some point the root system is going to tear down some stuff. Right. And, and I've seen that and I felt that, and I'm working on the roots now. Yeah.
I love that you're working on the roots. And I think that's really important to understand that, you know, it's natural when I, as a listener, listen to a podcast or read a book of someone who's doing, you know, great things. I instantly, because of self-judgment or whatever stories I tell myself, I put boundaries and barriers, basically justifications for why that person is amazing and achieves amazing things and why I'm not, regardless of if I am or not, you know? And so I look at someone like you, Ashanti, who's in the thick of your movement, you know, achieving phenomenal things with the Ever Forward Club and with the Million Masks challenge. And what you just said gives the listener, gives so many people an opportunity to go, hey, if the dude who is like leading the charge for helping people understand why we wear masks is still working on the roots of why he put them on, that gives me permission to be okay that I am still working on peeling this mask off, because there's some gorilla glue stuck to mine sometimes trying to peel that thing off. And I tell you, you know, whether it's the bedroom or the boardroom, sometimes I get stuck with how to take that thing off. For those, you know, those listening, a lot of people don't know, they usually know me through the Mankind Project and the Mankind Podcast, and they don't know that I'm in the business coaching space. And I remember getting into that space before finding much success, thinking, you know what, I'm 27, 28. I'm this young person. Who's really going to take me seriously? Who's going to respect me? And I, at this point, I'm still someone who's got years in the Mankind Project. I've got years working with my masks and understanding them, and I can still slap that thing on because I want that person in the room to think I'm valuable, to validate me. I need to feel safe in that space. Yeah. It's a habit. It really is a habit. And I love when I hear someone like you, when I hear someone like Lewis Howes, when I hear remarkable figures or just everyday blokes like me, say, you know what? It's a process. It's not, there's no perfect, I don't wear masks moment. It's just, you know what? It happens. The more I can be aware of it, the more I can keep doing the work.
And let me tell you this, it's a daily process, right? It's a daily process to decide when I want to talk about it, when I can talk about it. When I interviewed Lewis Howes, he talked about his own childhood abuse. And literally I was on the screen and something in me, like, I feel like if you could have seen what was happening in my head, you would have been like, something's wrong. Like, I'm like, tell him, you should say it. You should tell him, you should say it. And I'm like, I can't tell him this. I can't say this. I can't. I was like, and all I could say after he finished telling that, because I read his book, I knew what had happened. I didn't know he was going to talk about it on the show, but when he brought it up, I wanted to be like, man, what I said to him was, I said, you know, I really deeply identify with your story. Thank you for sharing it. Mm-hmm. Like, that's as much as I can say to really try. I really wanted to connect with him in that way. And then part of me was still afraid.
Yeah.
I was terrified.
Sure.
I was terrified to, like, on my show to be like, am I going to tell him this? No, I'm not going to tell him this. And I literally, as I think about it, as I look back to listen to the audio, I hear myself like just trying to, like, want to say it. And I just couldn't. But ultimately it's a journey. It's when young people, when I get to work with young people, I had a young man the other day. I was at this one workshop and I'll read this card. He made a card. And he said, on the outside, he shows that dedicated, friendly, and happy. He's a 14-year-old. And then on the back, he says, I'm overall just not as happy as I appear. I say my parents' divorce and current living situation doesn't bother me, but it does. The few ways I'm happy with is friends, but it's hard when they move on without you. I mean, they only asked to write one word, and he was able to, like, put it in words. And what we get to see, and some just put one word, caring, compassion, anger, sad. Like, but what we are excited, what I'm excited about is that when I go to talk to students, I don't talk to them because I did some research, right? I talk to them because I'm in that moment deciding, what can I tell them so that I don't make myself embarrassed. I don't feel bad. So I don't feel so vulnerable that I don't think that it can withstand them, like, somewhat respecting me. Like, I'm in the battle with them. And I think that's what Brené Brown talks about, being in the arena, right? It's good for people on the outside of the arena to be like, oh, you should have did it this way, you should have did it that way. But all I know is that in the arena, it's hard. You know what I'm saying? Like, to decide to feel my feelings and say, can I keep talking, you know, through the tears? Like, can I? It's hard. And sometimes it hits me, you know, and sometimes it lets me ride through it, you know?
Thank you for sharing that example of that young boy. I'm curious. I mean, there have been boys that have gone through the Ever Forward Club and they've gone through your work and that are now in their late 20s, you know, like they're adults now. They're grown men that are living their lives. And I want to speak to, through some of the tangible results of your work in the Ever Forward Club just from the past 10 years. I mean, you've got 100% graduation rate of seniors from high school. You've got more than 90% of your graduates attend 2 or 4 year colleges after graduation. 1,500 plus students and over 500 volunteers, participate in your 24-hour relay challenge. 200 potential first generation college students. We're talking their parents, their grandparents, like, the idea of going to college was never in their mind a possibility for them. You've got one graduate, you know, has received the governor's award. I mean, these are kids that greater society will think, well, you know what? We know the stats, they're horrible, but out of sight, out of mind. Yeah. These inner city kids that are grown up in really unfortunate circumstances. Well, you know what? That's just the card they were dealt. Is there an example that sticks out for you of a transformation, like, you know, that really, like, first comes to you of a boy you've worked with and their transformation through your work?
Man, there's so many of them right now. And actually, I wish they were in their late 20s. They're like 30s now. So they're getting they're like, Brad's up 30 to 30. I'm like, no, yo, don't do it. Don't do it, right? No. But, here's one I'll tell you. One young man, Jaime, he's now a U.S. Marine, you know. When he first came to our work, he was struggling, you know. And when he first came, he wasn't dressing for PE. The PE teacher, he knew I had this club. He said, hey, can you meet? There's a new kid came to our school. He was like, can you meet this kid? I was like, yeah, of course. So he brought him over during my prep. And, he shook my hand. He kind of handed me like a little limp hand. I'm like, hey, look at me. He was looking at the ground. He wasn't even looking at me. He like He was like, he handed me his hand. He didn't shake my hand. He handed me his hand. Like I was supposed to do something with it. I'm like, what am I doing with this? I said, squeeze my hand. Squeeze my hand. No, I said, harder than that. And I was like, there you go. Now, really what I was about was I wanted him to be present. Like he was there in body, but he was wherever he was. And when I made him squeeze my hand, like he looked at me in the eyes and more than anything, like that conversation that day when he shared that he had lost his mom and me being a mama's boy as an adult, like to understand a boy at 15 years old lost his mom like 5 years before and never got to grieve about it, where the family was like, hey, wow. She passed away at home. Like people were in there playing video games. They're goofy. The family doesn't want to let him see her. Like all the trauma that happened in him. And he never got to talk about it. And literally within 20 minutes, I mean, I was just asking questions. I was just trying to figure out, get to know him. And literally he opened up and he was just like, and so I think like, and now he's a husband. He has two dogs. He has a house, right? He's like, he's a protect. He's in the armed forces. I'm so proud of so many of them. That it just makes me like, all I can say is I'm glad they trusted that there was a space for them to like begin to process, so they didn't have to carry it by themselves. Like we see young people who've been through much less, and it's not about what happens to you; it's what happens inside you.
Yeah.
Some people have lost their parents, and they can still function well. Some people that creates a gaping hole and wound that's so hard to heal. But if you never get to heal it, what if it just becomes a wound all the time? And so, I named him right now because he was just on my mind. But there's so many of them, dozens and dozens of them. But we stay in touch. Some of them, one of our young men just had a baby like 2 weeks ago. He called me because he couldn't get the car seat. Like he's at the hospital. He's trying to get the car seat out of the car. Like the girl's about to give birth. Like, he's like, Branch. He's like, I'm like, what's going on? He's like, he's trying to FaceTime me, but I can't see because the camera's like doing this. He's like, I can't get the thing out of the car. I'm like, listen, the way you're pulling on it, I'm positive that if a baby was in there, it shouldn't be that hard. So take a breath. We just stopped. Took like four deep breaths. I said, there has to be a button. And he literally took the camera. He looked at the thing and he's like, let me try this. And he clicked the button and he's like, oh, there it is. And then he got it out of the car. He said, I'll call you later. And literally like 24 hours later, there's a baby. Like but he was stressing. Like he didn't, but thank goodness that he had somebody to call, right?
Yeah.
Like sometimes we stress over something else and we don't have anybody to call.
Well, man, I want to speak before we finish up. I want to speak to some tangible ways in which not only that we, the listeners, can learn to address our own masks and identify when we're wearing them, but how we can also encourage those around us to feel safe enough to take theirs off. I know you've shared with me many times over the years that I remember you called me once after you had a tough experience with the boys that you haven't been able to reach, the ones that you've done a lot. You've given them the olive branch. You've given them opportunities. And you know what? I think it's important what that taught me when you said that this young man has seemed like he had a lot of animosity towards you, that a part of you just kind of had to let that go. And understand that although you're in a place of service, you can't help everyone. It's not your job to save anyone, but be available to them. So what would you say to that person listening right now? I mean, we've got, a couple hundred folks live right now. What would you say to them if they've got someone in their lives that they just want to be open and available to, but may not be breaking through?
Well, I would say that when we're ready to listen, it may not be the time when somebody's ready to talk. And one of the things I've tried to do as a mentor, because I care deeply, is to how do we give a space for leaving the door open? What I've seen happen sometimes is that we reach out to people, we try and help them, they don't want help. And so we'd be like, well, fine, then I try to help you, then deal with it by yourself.
Yeah.
As opposed to they may be testing us. Do we really care? Do we really have time? Do we really want to listen? And so I just invite people, and definitely parents right now, and not just parents, teachers, community people, brothers, sisters, like sometimes we just need to know that somebody's going to be there so that when we're ready, we know that that call will be welcomed. Because you can't tell somebody when they should be ready to talk about what they're going through. I mean, it happens when it happens. And what I know of for sure is that right now we got a lot of young people that are feeling really lonely. What if you're in a family who thinks that because you have family, you should never feel lonely? Well, I mean, we got sixth graders who just left elementary school, feel like an extended elementary school. They don't like how many. This is a whole other thing. But sixth graders, ninth graders, college freshmen, their social circles have pretty much stayed stagnant. I'm sure people will be doing many researches in the future about what's happening to the development of students, not just those students, but all students, but definitely those who were trying to go to a new place. I mean, freshman, I have one high school freshman. I asked him, how many people do you know in your freshman class? He knows three people. And three of them, he only know their name. You don't even know what two of them look like because they never have their camera on. I'm like, he's a freshman in high school. It's already February. He only knows three people in his whole freshman class. Even if you were the loner, you at least know people because you see them on campus. But what are they doing? They're by themselves. And I think that so often, I think right now, we just need to like make room for them to be heard. We ask people to do the mask. We ask them to go to that website, make a mask, check out the masks that are in that site. Like, recognize you're not alone. Adults, hey, you don't know this experience. You don't know what it's like to be a teenager and to be talking to people through a screen all the time. You don't know. Now, you think because they're on their phones that they should be fine. But that's not human. That's connection, but it's different connection. And sure. So anyway, I love my phone. I'm not talking bad about phones. I'm just saying we got to make sure that we give room for our young people to recognize they're all experiencing this in a different way. Mm-hmm. We're experiencing what's happening right now. It's not what happens to you. It's what happens in you. Some kids are loving it right now. Some kids right now are at home, and I'm talking about kids, but I'm talking about our adults too. Some people are loving the fact that no one's judging what they wear, what their hair looks like. All they got to do is work on a rectangle all day. They got to just manage this rectangle.
Yeah.
No one needs to know what shoes I got on. And some kids right now are struggling. And so I just invite people. We got to start listening more. I think we just need to, I mean, I get excited, as you know, about this stuff. So we got to start listening twice as much as we talk. And if we can begin listening to each other, I mean, now we have a society that's lazy, right? We don't have to listen to anybody's opinion we don't want to hear. Our algorithms are set up so that we follow, we listen, we hear what we want to hear. So when we hear something different that doesn't match what we think, then we don't even know how to deal. So our kid tells us they're feeling lonely and we're like, what do you mean feeling lonely? You got family. You got your brother and sister in there. Yeah. They know they can't tell you. They know you can't handle it because you're going to shame them for feeling what they feel. And I think that's what we got to do better. And that's not just with our young people. That's with us. That's with adults like my age. Right. Yeah. So anyway,
there's something that I learned connecting with one of your peers, Tony Porter from A Call to Men. He talks a lot about social justice, gender justice, a lot of the isms, right? A lot of the isms that we apply in culture to try and better box people or understand people. And it's so natural for us, especially in the age we live in, to try and find, okay, who's the bad guys? Who's the good guys? Who are the people like me? How can I make them the good guys? And whoever's against us, the bad guys. Yeah. And when he's talking about things like, you know, harassment and harm and assault against women and girls, those that commit those acts, he doesn't even label them as the bad guys. I think that's really powerful because he says, and this is what I'm getting to. He says, I don't want to indict people. I want to invite them to see something differently. When you said that you know, were a hothead as a in your early years as an educator, and you would be challenged by these boys and you'd want to meet them at their level and try and win one over them. It was that was a process of indicting, right? You're wrong. I'm right. I'm the educator. But when you started to turn that around and say, young man, I'm speaking to you as a man, that act, you were inviting them to open a narrative. You are opening them on a respectful level. And that's something that I'm very grateful to now have with my father. It's something I did not have in the past. It was always a battle with him. Yeah. But that respect that we now have for one another, to know that human being to human being, that humanity in all of this is, you know what, how can I invite the people around me that may disagree with me politically, that may disagree with me socially, that may disagree with me in a business dealing? How can I invite them to see something a bit different? And how willing am I to see something from their side? of the fence from their hood, right?
Yeah.
Powerful stuff, man. Powerful stuff. I want to ask you, tell us what you're up to now, because I know, as I said right at the beginning, I have never known Ashanti to be mobile. I mean, the fact that we've got you sitting here for an hour or so, however long it's taking, is a miracle, because you're always got some plate spinning. So, mate, tell us what you're up to right now. I know you've got the Taken Off the Mask podcast, which is phenomenal. You had the 100K mask challenge, which is now up to 1 million. Mate, give us a rundown of what you've got going on and how we can support you.
Yeah, you know, we just launched. So this summer, our students were a part of the relaunch of the 100,000 mask challenge. It's called the Million Mask Movement. So our goal is to collect 1 million masks from around the world. So we have the digital tool that we created is at 100kmasks.com. You can go there, create your mask, submit it, be a part of this global movement. And what we've also launched is a young man here in the Bay Area who got inspired by our work. He took it to his school. Some 16 students at his school said, I want to help. And they led the charge. I didn't present to any students except the first group. They presented to all 1,250 students at their school. Virtual. Wow. So I trained them, but they did the presentations. And then it was like, exactly. That's how we're going to reach 1 million. I'm not going to reach 1 million. Like, we're going to inspire others who want to go in their communities and help people with these masks. And that has been so beautiful. So they just connected us to a new school in Alameda. It's going to reach the whole district. And that model is what we're launching right now. So the fundraiser for this Saturday coming up, we have a new documentary called Beyond Men and Masculinity that our work is going to be featured in. It's a fundraiser for us to raise money for this peer mentoring. So it's called the Million Mask Movement Peer Mentoring Project. And I'm super excited. So young people are getting trained. Like, there's a group of young men in Brazil right now who are getting trained. Like, it's happening. And I didn't even know. I couldn't have planned it. I don't think. Like, it wasn't an idea that came to my mind. It was like in the motion of doing it. When I was at the D school learning design thinking, it was like you prototype it and you test it. You don't plan it for a year and then test it and see if it's going to, like, you test it with something's right now. I could test it right here. I can go to a friend and who I've been thinking about lately and just say, hey, I want to let you know I've been thinking about you. Hey, I just want to let you know that you're on my mind. Do you need anything? Hey, maybe not, but at least to let that person know. And I think those small steps is what led to just this movement. And so that's happening. The screening of the documentary, which is coming out this Saturday, it's a U.S. premiere. They had the world premiere in Berlin a couple of months ago, and we get to do the U.S. premiere this Saturday, February 20th. And so, those are the things that are taking up a lot of our energy. And we have a young men's circle that are meeting outside of school, which is our first model like this. And it's been beautiful. So, the list keeps going. And that's what I remember telling you, the list that I have on my desk that I've checked away. Now I'm picking the list back up, because then when I hang up this call, we're going to get back into the work. But I'm so thankful. And I'm glad that I get to get up and do the work I think I was born to do. I think all the challenges that happened, they're there. But I think I get to create what I wish somebody had created for me. And so that no young man or student in general has to recognize or think that they're alone. And that's the work we're on right now. So we look forward to you being a part of the movement, anybody out there. And if you're a person like, you know, this is as a nonprofit leader, you probably, if you know nonprofit work, we're always kind of in this system of trying to build and grow, especially during the pandemic. So if you are a person who works for a company that believes in social justice, that believes in helping people be seen and understand that, we invite you to be a part of this movement with us. And Let me just show this last thing. I don't know how much time we got because I don't see a timer, but this is the image of our campaign. If you look at the outside of this face, it says, I'm okay on the outside. Yeah. But if you look a little closer in between, I'm okay. You see the word in between?
Not.
Yeah, not. And the artist, who's one of our former students, he said, you know, I put it, made it hard to see on purpose because it's hard to talk about and it's over the mouth because it's easy to say, I'm good, I'm cool, I'm fine, I'm okay.
Yeah.
But hopefully we have people in our lives that we can talk to when we're not. Yeah. Because that's what we feel is, that's what I feel is what we need more of. So, man, thank you.
Pleasure's mine, brother. For those of you that have been joining us live, this has been another live recording an episode of the Mankind Podcast, the podcast where we break the molds of modern manhood to prove to you that there's more than just one way to be a man. And it's also a chance to take the masks off and identify that, you know, through our truth, through our vulnerability, that's where we can really find a lot of great power in our lives. Ashanti, mate, any final words you want to share before we finish up?
The quote that we use in our work that says the longest distance that most people travel is the 18 inches between their head and their heart. And the part that we add in says most people get stuck in their heads. So I hope that you find a way to connect back to your heart. And we wish you all the best. We hope that you will be a part of this movement. If nothing else, tell somebody else about it if you're not ready. And when you're ready, we'll be waiting for you.
Wow. I tell you what, any chance I can get to spend time and open up a dialogue with Ashanti Branch, I am going to take it. He has been a dear friend for many years now, and to be able to watch him lead and grow his movement through humility, through determination, I mean, he's one of the hardest working human beings I think I've ever met, and the results are showing. I would love to make sure that you're all aware of how you can follow his amazing work, number one, by checking out the everforwardclub.org. So everforwardclub.org to find out about how, you know, his programs can be implemented in your schools and your communities. Also, if you want to contribute your mask to his 100K mask initiative, head to 100kmasks.com. As well, check out Ashanti's podcast, Branch Speaks. I believe it is a fantastic resource to connect with different figures all over the world, including Lewis Howes, on the impact of masks. You know, why we put on these masks to either protect or promote ourselves. He does a great job in his interviews, and if today's interview is a testament to anything, the man knows how to communicate a message. And lastly, I want you to check out a link in the show notes to a very powerful story of a young man who graduated through Ashanti's Ever Forward program. It's a touching tale of, you know, the circumstances and living conditions that this young boy was going through. I mean, having one pair of clothes for 3 weeks because his parents were so consumed in what they had going on. And to see how his life has turned around and changed, I believe this video will help you connect with the full impact that Ashanti and the Ever Forward Club are having. This has been the Mankind Podcast, produced in association with the Mankind Project USA. I have been your host, Brandon Clift, and I personally want to thank our guests for joining us today and imparting their wisdom from their experiences in this amazing journey called life. And of course, I want to thank you, the listener, because through your attention and your support, you make it a heck of a lot easier for us to let men out there in the world know that they are not alone, and that there is more than one way to be a man. Special thanks, of course, goes to my incredible team, Marketing and Communications Director Boyson Hodgson, producer and editor of this episode, Michael Russo, who makes me sound so much more intelligent than I actually am. So, of course, special kudos goes there. And if you've been enjoying the music throughout this episode and all of our episodes, check out Jim Donovan and the Sun King Warriors. I have links to them in the show notes. Now, the fee for this episode is simple. If you found gold and insights that you believe could benefit your loved ones and those you care about, be sure to share it with them. And of course, remember that life doesn't happen to us, it happens for us, so long as we rip the pen out of fate's hand and become the author of our own story. So my friend, pick up the pen, and we'll see you next week. Lots of love.